You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Nolan knows her knowledge is your power.
So this afternoon, we join acclaimed consumer journalist Wendy Nola as we look at really awkward insurance situations and where you're likely to really work hard to have to prove that the burglars or the damage did not happen with your knowledge because it was someone that you know or who somehow had access. Wendy, very interesting set of issues are arising through today's conversation. Hi.
Hi, Elsa. Good to be with you again. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I've covered so many insurance issues over the years, tricky sort of different ones, like, are you covered if rats eat through the wiring of your car and now you need a massive, expensive repair? Are you covered? And the answer is it depends on your policy, mostly not. But I'd never, in all my years of reporting on various matters, I've never looked into, but what if you're a victim of crime, but the perpetrator is somebody that's close to you or was close to you and thus still has access to your home. So it's not a traditional crime because there was no forced entry and most insurance policies weren't covered under those circumstances. So I just, when this came into my inbox, I thought, oh, definitely want to talk about this because I'm sure it's more common than we think.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, how many of us give keys to somebody that we know? How many of us say, here,
yes.
a space set of keys to my house? And then we, down the line, you know, things fall apart before we can get those keys back.
Exactly. Or you give it to a neighbor and the neighbor moves away and forgets, leaves the keys sort of hanging at the kitchen door or something. And the new owner, I don't know, it certainly gave me pause for thought in terms of am I making myself vulnerable here, unwittingly. So yeah, really, I thought it was a really interesting topic to explore.
Yeah, and potentially putting yourself in line for a repudiated claim because there wasn't any forced entry because it was either someone that you know, an ex, an employee, and so on, who did this this criminal act. So very fascinating. Have you had these cases in the past?
I haven't actually. As I say, I've had the whole gamut of different scenarios. I just had some personal experiences that sort of speaks to the situation. So the one was just before lockdown, an Uber came to fetch me at the airport, and as he sort of swung around to get to the boot, the whole left side of the car was just completely smashed, just like the person had dragged it along a wall or something. Oh. And I said to him, as I got in, and I'm very interested in Uber and their insurances because they have to pay so much because they're such high risk or huge excesses. Anyway, so he says, oh, don't talk to me. He said it was a girlfriend, now ex-girlfriend, he quickly added. I was asleep. She didn't even have a driver's license. She knew she couldn't drive the car, would never let her, but I was asleep. She took a key. She went to driving off. I don't know if she went to get food or what it was, but anyway, comes back and the car is smashed. And of course, because she didn't have she wasn't a designated driver, but that's not always, you can let the odd person, drive your car, as long as they're not the regular driver. But the problem was she wasn't licensed. And so he said, this is a big repair bill. I can't afford it. And I can't afford not to drive. And I don't know how this is going to resolve. And some stayed with me. And sometime later when I mentioned it to an insurance person, they said, well, actually, if he could make the case to his insurer that it was actually theft, she didn't have his permission. He was asleep. He wasn't in a position to say no or to stop her. So he should be able to make a claim. But of course, I didn't know how to get a hold of the poor chap. And the other one was, which I'm interested in running past our expert, is friends of ours recently bought a holiday home, and they moved in, and a week later, they returned the following weekend, and the TV and various other appliances were gone, and there was no sign of forced break-in. And chatting about it to the neighbor, The neighbor said, oh, I think the previous owners, they were known for giving keys to service providers to make life easier for them. You know, just you've got access if you're not here.
Yeah.
And the owners, previous owners denied it, but sounds small little village people talk and they said, no, there were keys floating. So, of course, they had to change all the locks. and I'd be interested, you know, from an insurance point of view, I mean, that's also, yes, there was no forced entry, but it wasn't your decision to make yourself vulnerable in that way. You inherited the situation unwittingly. So as you can see, that's just two examples that I suddenly thought of where it's a crime, you suffered a loss, but it's a bit of a different scenario to
absolutely,
the usual.
Absolutely. So we've got Greta Huisen, who's the head of customer experience rather at MyWay Insurance, to just kind of guide us through this conversation. But we also want to hear from you about those very awkward situations where there's been a burglary or damage to property, but it wasn't by a stranger, perhaps, or it wasn't through forced entry, that there could have been someone, whether with your knowledge or without your knowledge, who had access to keys and who then gained entry to the property to do something criminal, steal or damage the property, maybe even a vengeful ex, unbeknown to you. Greta, good afternoon. Thank you so much for guiding us through this one. Very odd scenarios. How are you doing?
Hi, Zaini, and hi, Wendy. I hope you guys are fine.
Yes, good. So what are some of the scenarios that you've encountered where presumably claims are arising from crimes committed by someone against their maybe separated or ex-spouse? What kind of scenarios are there?
There are quite a number, and I was quite interested. I heard the two that Wendy specifically mentioned for the poor Uber driver, and obviously the friends with the holiday home. I think I'm going to start I would like to address those two in particular as well, because I think those are actually quite more common than we think, where an ex-girlfriend or an ex-spouse actually gets involved. And it gets me to the first one that I think happens quite more regularly than what we think, and that's when people go through acrimonious separation, whether that is a life partner or a divorce. And in cases like that, what we see is that there's actually quite a number of frequent cases where people's property is stolen or it's sold or it's damaged during the separation by the other partner. So that definitely happens more frequently than what we think. And it's actually not just about the forced entry. Forced entry is obviously the main clause that is associated with most insurance companies, but there's also the one with regards to prevent or minimize a loss, which is also a responsibility that most consumers would have as a term and condition of their cover.
Right.
And in those cases, one of the things that I think the best advice that I can give consumers is to consider changing your locks. I know it is a lot of money, it's a lot of inconvenience, but not just for the safety of your own property, but also for the safety of you and your family, to rather consider changing locks.
Right. Yeah, that's good advice. Whether it's a new property or after things have gone wrong, especially if it's an acrimonious situation. Wendy?
Yes.
I was wondering, Greta, if you could share some particular case studies that have come, by way of claims around this, just to bring the issue home for our listeners. Do any sort of jump out at you that speaks
there
to this?
There is actually one. And I have a 14-year-old son myself, so maybe this one is the one that jumps up at me the most.
Yeah.
At this stage, and it's where your children take the keys of your car and they go for a joyride. And we've obviously had examples such as that where the client, they didn't have permission, but they took the car keys and then obviously the car is damaged. And those are quite difficult. Those are very difficult because I heard you said, you spoke to somebody in insurance to go and the advice they gave us is go and open a case of theft against the person that the perpetrated this act. But how do you do that to a child? So it's quite a difficult one, but it's one that happens quite frequently. So one of the things that we do, and you know, we love our son and all of that, and he's a good boy so far, touch wood. you know, you just make sure that your keys are in a safe space where you have access to them. Again, and it's also, and I don't just want to harp on this forced entry thing. Yeah. It's about if you can prove as a consumer that you did everything in your power to prevent or minimize the loss. That would also count in your favor.
Okay, we've got a few questions coming in, Greta. So we've got to take a break and then we'll get to them. It's Greta Goosen, the head of customer experience at MyWay Insurance, as we look at those insurance cases where there's damage or where there's theft, but it wasn't forced entry and it is perhaps someone that you know, such as an ex or a child in the case that Greta has just shared. If you've had such cases, I'd love to hear from you in terms of how the insurance company dealt with it and what you've heard so far from Greta. If you have any queries, let us know. 011-883-0702.
702. Nolan knows.
We're back with Greta Goosen, the head of customer experience at MyWay Insurance. Greta, here's an interesting question from one of our listeners. And it says, please ask your guest what happens with insurance if you have a party or a gathering or and something disappears. And maybe one of the guests has brought a plus one that you don't know. How would that be kind of considered? Oh. How would that be navigated?
I feel so sorry because I can just see this happening. I think we can all experience, you know, that you invite people to a party and people end up being plus ones. It is a difficult one because you are allowing strangers into your home. And unfortunately, with that comes a risk. There would be a risk exposure to this consumer. Normally, when things are taken in a party, that such as movables or risk cover, that's normally the stuff that is taken. Hopefully, if it's specified, some insurance companies do allow for, you know, the visible signs of forced entry clause, so it's not normally applied to all risk cover. So there could be a way of out of that. But however, the reality is you're exposed, and you definitely at risk of should things be stolen, the visible signs of forced entry clause not being a part. I would suggest, because you know it's all good and well, I tell you it's a risk and all of this, but the advice that I would give is make sure you know who you invite as a starting point. But also, you know, when you have a big gathering like that, speak to your insurance company, speak to your broker. Tell them upfront what the situation is. Because it's all about showing the behavior of a prudent consumer. Saying, listen, what can I do to prevent or minimize my loss? Because it's also about your danger.
Yeah.
Most insurance companies, when you would know, in a sense, in the short-term insurance ombudsman, that it's all about proving, is it material? Is the intention from the consumer to not prevent or minimize the loss? And those are all the things that would be looked at when there is a gap.
Okay.
So you show yourself to be aware of the risk of taking responsible steps to minimize it, all that kind of thing, and that would certainly stand in good stead. Yeah. Can I ask a question, or do you have another one, Azza?
No, go for it.
It reminded me of a case of a friend of mine, fellow journalist, whose son got to 17 and, you know, in the learning to drive phase, and he was taking professional lessons, but it was the weekend, and the father was so excited about his son's progress and said, right, boy, you take the car out of the garage, you know, just drive it down the driveway, that kind of scenario.
That.
And the son said, fine, we love that. Yeah, it's all safe, except the son panicked, and he was reversing out and got a bit jinxed, and so he slammed his foot onto the accelerator, jammed it further on the accelerator instead of on the brake, and ripped the car into the wall. In that kind of situation, Greta, I forgot to follow up whether it was paid by insurance or not, so I don't know. But I think it would be quite easy for the insurer to make the statement that, you know, you didn't take steps to minimize the risk, that possibly wasn't a sensible thing to do under the circumstances, or am I being overly pessimistic about the chances of such a claim being paid?
Yeah, Wendy, this is a very good question, and thank you for it. I think there are two things that stood out in this instance for me. Is firstly, I think you're right to be pessimistic, because obviously one of the clauses we have in insurance, and it's not just the tools to pay valid claims, but I actually also think it's to make the roads of South Africa safe, is that you must be a licensed driver. So in this instance, with the son, you know, not being a licensed driver, it could be recourse to reject the claim. That's the first one.
Not in itself, because, sorry, a learner driver may drive with a licensed driver in the car.
Yeah. Of course. But in this instance, he didn't. Yeah. So he is unlicensed.
No,
if the father was in the car with him, obviously,
okay,
he would be...
He was in the car. It was...
Okay, he was in the car. Hear that. Well, then it should be paid.
Yes.
In my opinion, there shouldn't be any reason not to pay that.
Okay.
We'll come to the notes in a bit. We've got Zainab who's given us a call. Hi, Zainab.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Dania,
welcome, Zainab.
Nola. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've got an issue with my insurance. It was a new insurance that I've taken out, and I told the broker that I don't have a linked arm response. And after paying the premium for a few months, there was a break-in, and now the insurance doesn't want to pay out the claim because they're saying that I'm supposed to have a linked arm response, and I'm saying, but I told the broker I don't have it, and they said it was fine. So what do I do in a case like this?
Right, Greta. So the broker, maybe there's a break or change in information to client and to the insurer.
Sorry, I didn't get the client's name.
Zainab.
Hi there. I'm very sorry about your birthday. I think it's something traumatizing to go through. So very clear. If you have clear evidence, or either record or off advice or some sort of voice recording, advising or emails even, where you gave all this information and complete and true information to the broker, and the broker did not portray that information correctly to the underwriter or insurer, you definitely have a lot of recourse. And that is one of the main reasons why the FAFE Act was introduced. It's all about sound advice. I'm definitely more than prepared to, after the show, if you want to get in contact with me, so that I can see how I can help you with this matter.
Right.
Armed response is, you know, obviously, if you provided that as an underwriting criteria when you took out the policy, normally there is a discount involved in getting the premium lower. And therefore, it becomes material to the risk exposure and the risk underwriting of your house. But if you provided true and complete information and that was due to an error or negligence or whatever, not conveyed through to the underwriter, you definitely have a claim.
Okay.
I would definitely be interested to see how I can help you.
That's fine. We'll actually put her in touch with you. Zainab, stay on the line. We'll continue this after the latest in Eyewitness News headlines. And Tammy and some of your WhatsApps have come in on this. The scenarios can be so many, so plentiful. So let's explore some of those and how hopefully we'll get a sense of how we can navigate claiming when these weird scenarios play out. Quite awkward.
702.
Nola knows.
Let's go straight to Ntami. Thanks for your patience, Ntami. You want just assistance with the scenario around insurance. Hi.
Hi, Azania. Yes. So I was separating with my husband. We're still kind of unsure whether to stay together or separate officially. But at the time, he didn't have a car. So I said to him he could drive my one car because I had a company car as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a period when I didn't see my car and I asked him where my car is. Then he said, no, there was something wrong with it, so he's just quickly getting it fixed. Upon trying to renew my license disc, I found out that my car had been pawned to a company called BH Capital. Now, there's damage to the car that these people did, And I'm not sure how to handle it because technically the car wasn't even in my name. It was owned by the BH Capital people. So now I don't even know how to get my car fixed.
What? I'm still kind of stunned by this scenario. He managed to sell your car. So does that mean he did it with your details?
Yes. So he committed fraud. And obviously those BH Capital people then supported him in his fraud because they should have asked for the owner.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the department also was involved because when I tried to change the ownership back to me, they asked me for the owner. And I said, I don't know the owner. I'm the only owner I've ever known of this car.
Where's the car, Ntami?
It's in my garage.
How did you get it in your possession if it was pawned?
No, it was back. He had pawned it and got it back. Without me realizing.
Oh, now when you went to do the to renew the license, you found out that it had been sold. Okay.
Yes, so that's the period when it got damaged. And so because it wasn't in my... I was paying for insurance all this time, not knowing that... My car had been pawned.
It's the stuff of nightmares. This is what a scenario. Greta, we talked about awkward situations.
Listen, this is, for me, I'm sending you a virtual hug. That's the thing that I want to tell you. It's like, seriously, I'm really feeling for you. My best advice to you is to get a good lawyer. You definitely have a case of ownership and possession. Luckily, possession is ownership most of the time. I would suggest that you get a lawyer and obviously to try and resolve this matter for you with regards to the ownership, and especially because you say that the company, it didn't have your permission, but you didn't sign any documents. So
no, I didn't know anything. I'd never even heard about the company.
So I would definitely advise you to go the legal route to obtain ownership again of your vehicle.
No, it is back. The ownership is back. The issue is getting it fixed. I got my father to get the ownership back because, father. But so the ownership is back, but now it's getting the damages fixed. Because I didn't want to go the legal route because he is, the father of my child and everything. So I didn't want to go that legal route.
And unfortunately, I can tell you that from an insurance point of view, this is a classic example where you are going to find it very difficult to get your damages repaired by the insurance contract.
Even though she's been paying for it. So that period where it wasn't in her possession or ownership, they cannot cover.
Well, one of the things that you can maybe do... if some insurance companies are more lenient with regards to accidental cover, maybe there's some premium refunds that you can get. Some money back because, you basically, they pay full comprehensive cover and maybe there will be some leniency to get you some of your premiums back. That is the best advice I can give you. And then obviously, and I understand the sensitivity of the matter, to get the damages fixed and to get recourse on that, I definitely, the legal route is your best route to go.
And this would be from the estranged husband?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right. No, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I did send him an invoice, but who knows if he'll pay.
You sent an invoice. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see if he'll pay. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ntami. She's in Randburg. What a scenario. Let's also play you this one coming in on our voice notes.
Hi, Azania and Wendy. I had that with regards to insurance. That happened to me 8 years ago. For me, it was the lady who was helping me. I mean, I just had a child and the baby was three months old. And the nanny, she's the one who stole. She poisoned me and then she stole and she left. But of course she had keys. When I went to hospital, then she raided the house and left. And the insurance wouldn't pay because they said that I let her in. That was 8 years ago. So yeah, it happened to me. It's Pumla. Thanks.
Oh, Pumla, thank you for sharing that.
Terrible.
One. And she goes on to text to say insurance didn't pay and it was a living nanny who stole. So that's really the scenario there. And often our domestic workers do have sort of authorized access at the gate, in the house, their keys, cards, whatever kind of access is required. How is that regarded, Greta?
Just as Pumla explained it. And I really feel for it. Must have been terrible to go through something like this. The only mitigating factor would be, listen, what terms and conditions did you put in into your employment contract with your helper, you know, or your nanny, or that type of thing. Those would be the mitigating circumstances that an insurance company would look at with regards to this. This is a terrible case. In Pumla's case, this is a very, I really feel for her because I do think, what else could she have done? You know, she was poisoned. It is terrible. It's actually quite a terrible one. And again, most insurance companies have a claims philosophy where we look at the materiality, the prejudice, and the intent. And in this instance, if you apply those three cornerstones of how claims are paid or not paid, they would definitely, in my opinion, be recall for Pumla. Because what else must she do? You know, it's not like she acted in a negligent manner in any way, shape, or form. She didn't. So,
And she was incapacitated because of that poisoning. Okay. So you feel that they should have paid.
Yeah, they should have definitely.
Definitely.
Wendy?
It's a pity it's so long ago, because that's a case I would definitely have liked to have taken up with the insurer.
Yes.
Because it's not like she, fired the nanny and neglected to get the keys back from her, or was in any way negligent. She was, and it was a terrible crime. She was incapacitated. This person she trusted with her young baby. I mean, it was a complete abuse of trust. I don't think, I certainly would have fought very hard for that claim to be paid out.
And finally, what about show days? Many years ago, we had our laptop stolen on a show day. Obviously, the day before things changed due to COVID, and I know there were some other measures put in place, like making sure that anyone coming to view the house, that they write down their details, their name, ID number, contact numbers, and so on. But prior to that, it wasn't the case. You know, anybody could come in and obviously move through your house, take a look. And when we got back, the estate agent said, thank you, goodbye, and I'll tell you how it goes. And as we were settling in, we realized that what we had put away, in fact, a laptop, it was out of sight, though, had been stolen. What about in those circumstances?
Yeah, Zania, that, again, it's something you almost don't expect to be exposed in a way, hey? It's almost a surprise to go through something like that. So, the advice that I will give in an instance like that is obviously when you sign up an agent, specifically when you're selling your home, most agents need to have professional indemnity insurance, which is, as for those periods of time, you are basically showing curatorship or supervising ship of this property over to this agent. And for that time frame, that agent is actually responsible for your property. And for the safekeeping thereof. In my opinion, the advice that I will give our listeners is to make sure that when you sign up an agent, to make sure that there is professional indemnity cover in place, and that you know exactly the terms and conditions associated with an open day or a show house. Who is going to be there? What is their role when they are there?
et cetera. So that is definitely one of the things. And that goes for most contractors, you know, even if you do renovations at your home,
yeah.
Making sure that you use a reputable contractors that have professional indemnity insurance. There's an upfront understanding of what will happen if things get lost. And who will be liable for it.
Who will be liable. Okay, sounds good. Greta, thank you very much for your time and explaining all of these, what we should expect from these different very awkward scenarios.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Zania. Thank you, Wendy. And thank you, listeners.
Thank you, Greta Hoesen there, the head of customer experience at MyWay Insurance. We've got one more topic with Wendy. It's coming up after the break. We're back with Wendy Nola. We'll be looking at specials, to be aware of all sorts of specials out there and what the offer actually is and whether or not you are indeed saving. But on the insurance topic, here's what you've had to say.
Hi, Aza and your guests. I'm not an insurance guru by any means. What bothers me about this whole discussion is I am paying the insurance company to assume my risk. And all they do is put in all sorts of fancy clauses and the tiny writing at the bottom to try and wiggle out of the contract and out of the responsibility of paying. Help.
Hi, Azania. And
oh yeah, we've actually played this one. There's an interesting scenario, another scenario in fact, that came up around leaving things in the car. Take a listen.
I'd come back from a coastal trip, got home about 1 a.m, had moved into a new complex. I mean, what's the harm in just taking out the perishables? I thought we could unpack all the stuff out of the Fortuna in the morning. And so we take the perishables, leave everything, including my handbag. And someone beat us to it. And yep. The insurance company refused to pay because we enticed them by leaving the stuff in the Fortuna that did not have a locked garage.
Sure. Right, so those are some of the situations. Yeah, Wendy?
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, those speak to what Greta alluded to, and that is we have rights and responsibilities. So we can't elevate the risk and expect the insurer to pay anyway. So it would most definitely, I'm sorry for the loss of the last caller there, but mm-hmm. You know, that would be considered irresponsible in today's climate to leave a car unlocked with valuables and visible that members of the public could easily access, even if it's in your own community complex, whatever. It still would be considered irresponsible. Maybe in not other parts of the world, but certainly here.
Yeah, but and, you didn't do enough to minimize loss by leaving
exactly.
them.
Exactly. So they okay. expect us to mitigate our own risk, and that's, I mean, I take up many cases where insurers have been patently unfair, in my view. But I certainly think there needs to be a situation where we as consumers have to take responsibility okay. for our own failure to protect our belongings, our possessions that we have. But just because you're paying an insurance premium doesn't mean you can behave exactly as you want and make it very easy for people okay. to take from you.
Right. There was an interesting post that grabbed people's attention around a not
yes.
so great special offer. Tell us more.
Well, I see this a lot, as people do tend to post these photos. I nicked them a few years ago, shelfies. So I love the hashtag shelfie. And it's one of those that people say, on Twitter, they'll say, "Oh, do they think we are idiots? What the hell? Is math standard really this low in this country?" So you'll see a sign. So not the normal little barcode sign on the shelf, but a standout one, you know, often handwritten or, you know, red or jagged edges or anything that we're conditioned to believe to be, this is a good price, this is a good deal. So it'll say, the normal prices say, will just be on the shelf, say it's 10 Rand, but buy two for, and you'd think it would be less than 20 Rand, right? I mean, I'm no mess buff, but I'm not going to be enticed to buy extra than what I was buying and pay more. But it'll be bad two for 25 rand.
Yeah, meanwhile, the price for the single item is 11 rand, but you're saying two will, yes, should be 25 rand. So, this is what happened at ShopRite.
Take two and pay more.
Yeah. Okay,
so the latest example of this was ShopRite last week. A lot of shelfies. So there was one loaf of Sasco sliced white is 9.99. I'm just going to round it off to 10. Or take two for 25 rand instead of 20. Cadbury slabs, 80 grams, 12 rand each, or two for 26 rand. So even you can imagine on social media, a lot of people just not really happy about that at all, calling it dodgy, calling it misleading, calling them, you know, all sorts of things. So I thought, right, I'm actually going to take this up now with the company. And I got the response that I was totally expecting. Sent all the images to ShopRite and said, you know, I do think it's safe to assume that consumers wouldn't choose to buy more than one of the same item if that came with a price penalty. What is going on? And why does it happen so often? And I have to say, it's not just ShopRite, obviously. It's Pick and Pay. It's Spa. It happens
in store. Yeah, something's going wrong in store. Yeah.
Yes, can we give them a calculator? What do we need to do here? Because it's just not acceptable. And they said, yes, you're absolutely right. Any buy two offer must always be a good deal for a consumer. We invite our customers to immediately engage with us so that this is not the case, so that urgent action can be taken to rectify, blah, blah, blah. It's human error, they said, that this kind of error creeps in and from time to time when changes are applied manually at store level to accommodate promotional deals. And basically, so I'm saying, tell them and also put it on Twitter, hashtag Shelfie. Let's share and care and share.
Shelfies. Actually going to look that up to see what comes up. All the shelfies that are just waiting on Twitter, captured by consumers. So Wendy advising you to take it up and share it to make everybody else aware.